Thank you, Robert, and good morning to everybody. It's a pleasure to be here today, and I'd like to thank the organising committee of BIF for inviting me to come and talk about feed efficiency, where we've come from and where we're going in Australia. I'd also like to commend Jim Gosey and his group for the for getting the proceedings out before BIF. It put the pressure on the speakers to have our talks ready and our everything written, but also it means you've got it in front of you. If there's anything that you miss, most of it, particularly for my talk, is in those proceedings, along with a lot of additional reference material if you need to follow that up.
Which one puts this through,
Robert? Which one sends it through to the screen? Function F5. I can't send the date. Okay. What I want to talk about is the genetic prediction of efficiency, and probably looking into the future, giving a bit of an Australian perspective on where we've come from and where we think we're going with this trait. What I want to do is talk about the genetics of feed intake and efficiency. So I'm very much going to focus on feed intake. I'm not going to talk about reproductive efficiency or whole herd efficiency. I'm going to strictly go with feed efficiency, describe some research projects that I've been involved with and ones that have happened in Australia, the outcomes of those projects, and then I want to spend time of taking the science that we've developed and what we're trying to do in terms of putting that into industry, and what we can do in terms of improving feed efficiency by selection, and where I think we're going in the future. And just in case the jet lag gets the better of me or the sleepiness gets the better of you, I can say we've made a start in this area. So that's my conclusion. We've certainly made a start, but there's still lots to learn. So if you want to go to sleep now, you've got half an hour. You've got half an hour up your sleeve until John Pollock comes on. In terms of the genetics of feed efficiency, there's a few key things. We heard yesterday Barry talk about how to describe profit. I'm breaking the rule and calling it cost minus return, but you can think of it as return on investment if you like. Genetic improvement in the past has generally focused on the return traits. We've probably done a reasonable job at looking at those traits that affect profitability in terms of returns. We've done very little in terms of the genetics of traits that affect profitability from the cost angle. And I think in the future this is where we're going to have to focus. If any company was to ignore their cost of production, it would be a joke. So I think this is where we're going to head in terms of things like disease resistance, things that are affecting costs that we know have a genetic basis. And of course, we've heard lots about the large cost of beef production, of course, is the feed, and in particular the feed for the cow. So it's pretty simple, if we're going to look at this from genetics, is can these costs be decreased by using genetics? And there's a few things there that we must know. Is feed intake or some measure of efficiency heritable, as in is it under any genetic control? And can it be measured? And this, for a genetic improvement program, it involves a cost. And how many can we measure in industry? As in, we've got to be able to take it out, and our seed stock breeders or our commercial breeders, we've got to be able to get data on pedigreed animals. And that's important. And then we need to know, is it genetically related to other traits? The first one is there a correlated, easier measure that our industry can measure? But also, is there any correlated response to selection for that trait that may be seen as unfavourable in particular or antagonistic? If we're going to do anything by using the genetics, then it's also important that we know what is the economic value of that feed intake. And lastly, what is the importance of feed intake relative to the other traits that affect profitability? We can't single trait select only for the cost traits, because then we'd be ignoring those return traits. So we've got to then put it in context of the whole production system and the whole selection index. So I don't think William's done a great job at defining the traits, so I've saved a little bit of time here. I wanted to go through and make sure we were on the same wavelength. So feed intake is simply amount of food eaten. Often you might need to consider adjusting for the actual energy density of that diet if you want to be comparing apples with apples. Feed conversion ratio, once again, feed eaten over weight gain. This has commonly been used in some of the poultry and swine industries. The inverse of that ratio is simply gain over feed eaten. And net or residual food intake, as William described it, is simply the amount of food eaten. It is still in kilos or pounds per day, but it's been adjusted for the weight gain of that animal and the metabolic weight, which is simply the weight of that animal raised to a power of either 0.73 or 0.75, which takes it into metabolic weight, which is then a better measure of the maintenance requirements of that animal. So we've got it's adjusted for the gain and for the metabolic weight. To make it simple, as William said, it's the difference between the food intake of an animal and the expected food intake given its growth rate and its weight. So how much did it eat relative to what we would have expected that animal to eat? So now I want to describe some research that we've done in Australia. Obviously, each of those ratios included food intake. So our angle was, if we're going to get at any of these traits, we've got to measure food intake. And so these describe some studies. The first was conducted by New South Wales Agriculture, a state government organisation in the state that I work for, in Trangie, which is in western New South Wales. And over the last 5 to 6 years, they've measured 1,500 individual animals at post-weaning in predominantly Angus bulls and heifers. They did bring back mature cows that were tested as weaners when they were 4.5, dry, non-lactating, and put them back in the food efficiency unit. They also did suckle weighs on those to measure milk production in those cows. We have cow weights, and we also have cow reproductive performance. So that, I think I mention it later, we currently have a publication that is being refereed on that research. It was a 70 or 120 day feed intake test, individual feed intake test, and this diet was a pelleted alfalfa wheat diet of only about 10 megajoules, so it's not a feedlot diet, it's more a diet to try and emulate pasture. It's not a heavy energy feedlot diet. And they also developed divergent selection lines using the progeny, using the animals out of that test to select up and down for feed efficiency or for residual feed intake. The second research that's been involved in measuring feed intake is the cooperative, the Beef Cooperative Research Centre, or just simply the Beef CRC. This is a research organisation that is a cooperative between several of the key players in the Australian research industry, universities, CSIRO, which is equivalent to your sort of USDA researchers here, and the federal government or Commonwealth government put in a lot of matching dollars if the research organisations could cooperate, and we were able to do that and create this CRC. And what we did was there was lots of different angles to the project, but the one that I was involved in was a progeny test for live animal carcass, meat quality and eating quality, where we generated 8,000 pedigree animals, where we took those animals through from conception all the way through to taste panel, measuring everything along the way that you could imagine. And we also in that study looked at the G by E interactions. There were 7 breeds. We finished half the animals on grain and half on pasture, and then we overlaid them finishing the 3 market weight endpoints. So we were able to look at G by E, genotype by environment interactions, at the genetic level for all those traits, for tenderness, for meat yield, for a lot of different traits. What we were also able to do was 1,600 animals of the southern feedlot. We measured individual food intake on those animals using somewhere between a 50 and 120 day test, depending on how long those animals were actually in the feedlot. And they were mainly steers, fed a feedlot diet. So this is more what you would see in a commercial production system rather than what we were measuring in the Trangie style test, which is more a seed stock type test. And these animals were a lot heavier. So just in terms of perspective, this is Australia, obviously. As you go north, it gets hotter. So that's a little bit of a twist from here. In terms of some basic statistics, we're the driest continent on Earth. So obviously feed efficiency is pretty important to us. 26 million head of cattle, 150 million sheep and falling rapidly. We're predominantly a grazing-based system. Pasture production of beef cattle is our main production system, but we do have quite a considerable amount of cattle on feed, about 0.8 million cattle on feed. And obviously the cost of our producing feed, we don't have an Illinois-Indiana corn belt in Australia, so we have to rely a lot on wheat and barley for our feedlot diets in Australia. Armidale is situated about there, and that's where the beef CRC feedlot was, and also in New South Wales in the central west is where the Trangie research was. So if anyone's been to Australia, that sort of puts us where we are. Sydney's about down here on the coast. So this is the beef CRC research feedlot that we were using. And what we have here in the front of these pens is the automatic feeders that we used. And there were 16 automatic feeders on the front of these pens that held up to between 10 and 12 animals. So very simply, the animals in these pens came into these feeders. There was a light, a receiver here that got the animal's ID as it came in. These feeders then measured what time of day it was, how much that animal ate, and then it backed out and came in again later. So, and then it logged that to a computer. Now, what it allowed us to get was not only the amount of food that animal ate, but when it ate, and how much it ate, and how often it ate. And so, yesterday Tom Jenkins was talking about looking at appetite. Well, we have a little bit of an insight because we know those animals that were more efficient or when they were animals that might have eaten more, we actually know how they did that and when they came in and what time of the day it was and did they eat a little meal or did they eat a big meal. And so that's some very interesting data that we've been able to look at. And you can see here that this is a purebred Brahman and we were able to get those animals to use this system quite easily. So if we could get that sort of genotype to work in this feeding system, then we could measure almost anything. This is the research at Trangie. It's a different feeding system. Unfortunately, this is the best shot I could get. These are just these hoppers that drop the food down into these units. It's one pen that contains 100 animals with 10 of these feeders, and they simply feed into the front where their automatic tag is read. Once again, it weighs the amount of feed that those animals have eaten. So in terms of the key research findings, obviously I want to go through what those two studies have shown, the New South Wales Trangie and the beef CRC, and we've also done quite a bit of work now looking at how do we use those in a breeding system. How do we design breeding projects to use this trait, because it's very difficult to measure, it's very costly to measure, therefore we can't waste any effort. We've got to make sure that we're doing the right job measuring the right animals. So in terms of the traits, just some very simple raw statistics on food intake for the Trangie, and what I'll do is I can click through these in terms of average daily gain, weight, food conversion ratio and net feed intake, but it's probably easier if I turn them into pounds for you because that might make more sense. So you can see, if you look at William's paper, that our feed intake was quite similar in these post-weaning steers, 21 pounds, average daily gain of 2.9 pounds per day, 726 pounds of weight. Now, the net feed intake is zero. Obviously, it's a deviation. We've adjusted for growth, we've adjusted for weight. Therefore, the mean of the group is zero. On average, they ate what they were expected to eat. But you can see the standard deviation of 1.6 pounds. If you think of your bell-shaped curve, there were animals out there that were eating. You know, there was some animals that were eating 1.6 pounds more than they should have been, and there are other animals that were eating 1.6 pounds less than they should have been eating, given the prediction of how much they should have eaten given their weight and their gain. I've only got two slides of heritabilities and correlations, so I've tried to make the talk as much producer-friendly as I can, but in terms of seeing what is the genetics, I'll give heritabilities on the diagonals and some genetic correlations on the off-diagonals. So in terms of this, the Trange research on the post-weaning traits, you can see that food intake is certainly heritable, and this is some of the work both Dave Nodder and William presented these this morning. Food conversion ratio, 29% heritable, and net feed intake, 0.39 or 39% heritable. We can change these traits through selection. They are under genetic control. But also in terms of what are the genetic relationships, we see that feed intake is positively correlated with average daily gain. This is the relationship that the poultry industry and the swine industry have been using, particularly also that the food conversion ratio. If we make our animals faster growing, we decrease food conversion ratio. We make them more efficient, more gross efficiency, and this is predominantly how industries have improved feed efficiency. But because the way we've defined our trait, that we've adjusted for growth rate and we've adjusted for weight, we've broken the correlation, even at the genetic level, between food intake and average daily gain. And that's a key, that we're not simply selecting for faster growing animals, we're trying to get at the inherent efficiency within those animals that perform the same. And again, we've got feed intake with food conversion. If we improve net feed intake, our animals are eating less. That's what that correlation is saying to me at the genetic level, that those are positively correlated, where both of them are better being less. Obviously, net feed intake, the more negative, the better. Food conversion ratio, the more negative, the better. And again, food conversion ratio is also correlated with net feed intake. If we select for net feed intake, we are inherently improving feed conversion ratio. I mentioned that the Trange guys set up selection lines where they took the top bulls and the heifers and divided them based on their food intake, their net feed intake records, into two lines. And they were able to achieve in 5 years two generations up and two generations down, and they generated an annual divergence of 0.12 kilos of net feed intake. And that, it actually came up with a realised heritability quite close to the estimate. But we can change this trait, and they were able to change it quite rapidly under single trait selection. The other thing is, we're obviously measuring animals post-weaning, but the key that we need to get at is cow feed intake, and also cow intake at pasture. But now we hit a bit of a problem. But we have some insight that the cow test, where we returned those cows to the feeders, net feed intake in the cows was heritable, 0.22, and was highly correlated with the measure at yearling. So we're only just getting into this, and as I said before, we're looking to publish some of this work, and I'm not going to go into it too much, but certainly over the next 12 months we'll be really analysing this data to make sure we see where we're going. We have also done some studies, some limited studies, and I've made reference to this in the paper, where we've used alkanes using slow-release capsules in the rumen and measured the throughput of that synthetic alkane on pasture to see, these were steers from these high and low lines, to see was what we predicted, did we see it at pasture? And there was the evidence at the moment, and we've still got some of that data to analyse, because some of those steers we also put into the feed intake units and measured their individual intake. So we've got a measurement of them at pasture and at intake. Now, we've only got about 100 steers, but it should give us an indication. But this area needs more research, and I'm sure from our talks from Tom Jenkins, you know, this cow intake, what the cow is doing is something that we've got to be very important, that if we select for a test in the steers, we've got to be pretty sure we know what we're going to be doing out there in our cows. If we look at the beef CRC results, now these are from steers on feed. You can see here they're eating more, 12 kilos a day. They're gaining a bit more. They're a lot heavier. And as I did before, just to make it easy for everybody, so you can see that they're up around the 27 pounds a day food intake. They're a lot heavier. Once again, their net feed intake is zero, with once again quite a considerable standard deviation. Quite a bit of variation existed in these animals again. Once again, heritabilities, results from that. Now, the first thing we see here is that feed intake has a similar heritability, but we got a much lower estimate of net feed intake, only about 18%. Now, this is probably due to we had a shorter testing time because we had these in our research feedlot, but we were trying to emulate commercial production systems, and a lot of the times we just had to get those animals out because they were ready, or we had more cattle coming, or the abattoir said they had a window to slaughter these cattle and they needed to come. So a lot of our food intake data wasn't for 70 days, it was only for 50 to 60 days. Now the problem there is, when we talk about net feed intake or feed conversion ratio, one of the key things you've got to do is measure food intake. That's reasonably simple. The problem isn't estimating accurately average daily gain. You must know that animal is eating this food and it is turning it into weight. Getting an accurate estimate of average daily gain is very difficult. And I suspect William Herring's talk this morning, he showed the difficulty in one of his traits, and I think it probably was because he can't estimate accurately that average daily gain. We had a lot of trouble here. You can't estimate average daily gain accurately over a 50-day period if you only weigh those animals every 2 weeks. We found that out, and we've had to do some adjusting in our data to recover something from it, and we've had to use the average daily gain over the entire feedlot period to be able to get this to work. And so it's a real learning, and it's something that's driven some further research, is that getting an accurate genetic estimate of average daily gain is critical for any work on feed efficiency. But we overcame that, and we generated quite similar genetic correlations for these traits, as we saw before. The additional ones that I wanted to show here was we also had on all these animals complete carcass records, and this is simply their carcass fat and the trait intramuscular fat, which is a chemical measure of marbling. And we saw for those two traits that once again they're quite heritable, 35 and 38% respectively. The genetic correlation between net feed intake and fat in this particular data set is 0.48, quite strong, and also with marbling 0.22. Animals that are more efficient tend to be genetically leaner with less marbling. So this is something that we will have to manage, because some of our markets, marbling is a very important trait. It also sends up some warning signals for the cow herd. If we make our animals more efficient, do we make our females leaner? And I'm sure after talks yesterday, there'll be a lot of people that will say, oh, yeah, we better be careful about that. We've also done a little bit of work in breeding design. How do we take these results and use them? And what we've done is there's been some people do a lot of simulation studies where what is the value of net feed intake in a breeding program? And we looked at altering the level of recording across the seed stock industry. What was the effect if we changed the production system and the market? And what happened if we altered the cost of doing the feed intake test? And I can't give you all the results, but the references are in my paper if you want to chase up some of those that work. In brief, if you include net feed intake in a dollar index, we're able to increase profit across the whole production system at the commercial producer for about 14% on a domestic. Our domestic market is a lightweight animal, but in the export market, the Japanese steer, which is a considerable portion of our industry, we were able to show that we could increase profit by up to 40% if we were able to measure food intake in that system. So it gave us real encouragement that we better continue to try and work out what was going on here, because we can see that this can be quite considerably important. And there's also been work by some graduate students on looking at some strategies to optimise the measurement of feed intake or feed efficiency data, and we've come up with some two-stage selection strategies that we might be able to implement, where, and I talk just a little bit at the end about that, that we can't afford to just, or we can't afford to measure the whole industry, but there may be some strategies that we come up with where we identify particular animals that we should be testing. And also we've looked at, should we be testing the individual versus doing a progeny test on that individual. So do we test the young bull, or do we just go in and produce progeny that we feed intake test? So we've done a lot of work in that area, and you can follow that up in the papers. Putting the research into practice. I want to talk about developing EBVs, or for the same analogy here is EPDs, and how is our industry measuring this trait? Well, what we've done is we've developed an EBV. We've used the data that we collected, and so we've put the theory and the research, and we're trying to put it into breeding programs so that our breeders can start selecting for this trait. But we had to decide on what trait to measure for a genetic analysis. It needs to be simple. We can't have things that are too complicated for our breeders to be measuring. It's got to be repeatable, as in we've got to clearly define it so we can collect the same sort of trait each time across different properties, across different herds. It's obviously got to be cost effective. We've got to measure it on large numbers. We can't measure it on just a couple of hundred animals. And then you've got to consider the genetic evaluation and the breeding objective approach that you're going to use later. What framework is that trait then going to sit into? It required a lot of consultation with industry, and the group at Trangie had their own industry consultative group, breeders, commercial and seed stock, that they bounced these ideas and their research results off. And we as scientists had to adjust our thinking, particularly the problem we faced with estimating this average daily gain. And then after that, for people down the back who mightn't be able to read that, we came up with that we thought we would have to measure feed intake over a 70-day test, and that we would analyse the trait net feed intake. So that was the approach we took. The data we used to estimate these EPDs or EBVs was the Trangie data, the CRC data, and industry, because while this research was going on, innovative breeders were jumping on board and starting to test animals as well. So we ended up with a bit over 2,000 individual food intake for Angus, and a much lower, only 560 for Hereford. So you can see here we're not setting the world on fire in terms of the number of records, but we've certainly made a start. We knew the management group of these animals, and we computed their net feed intake. And then the analysis was just a simple single trait BLUP mixed model with a direct effect only model. We didn't fit a maternal effect, and we used the heritability of 35%. We produced EBVs on all animals in the pedigree, and we had a mean EBV and quite a reasonable standard deviation, and they range from minus 0.13 kilos to plus 0.13 kilos. And I've got a slide next that will help you with those. And once again, their accuracies obviously were reasonably low, and these are a breed plan accuracy. In terms of a BIF accuracy, our best bull was still only 51%. So when I show the next slide, remember that, you know, these are low accuracy. Obviously, we don't have records on a lot of the animals themselves, and we don't have huge numbers of progeny. Likewise for the Herefords, They had a lower standard deviation. They have less data on their EBV. You can see the spread was less and their accuracies were lower. So what does the feed intake EBV mean? Well, if I take these two bulls, T24 and S454, which are two bulls that actually had their own feed intake measured at Trangie, he was plus 1.12 and he was minus 1.18. If we were to join those bulls to similar cows and manage them the same and produce the steers and put them in a feedlot, what we would predict from that is that the steers from this bull would eat 1.15 kilos feed more per day for the same weight and gain as the other bull. That's 3.3 pounds per day. Now you think, is that likely to be important for those sort of bulls? And so to put it in perspective, if feed costs 22 cents a kilo, they're on feed for 120 days, that's about $30 a steer. In our terms, for you guys, if I convert that to 10 cents a pound, which is probably, from what I heard this morning, about double what it probably costs for your feed, it would be the same. And if those bulls created 25 steers over their lifetime of 4 years, that's about $3,000 in the difference in the progeny of those bulls in terms of the feed they ate for exactly the same performance in weight and gain. That's probably not the right number there, because we haven't costed what their daughters would also be doing, but also they could be consuming different amounts of feed. This is only when you adjust them to the same. So this is a little bit of a fictitious number, but I thought I'd use it to try and put it in perspective on just what it might be worth. So I said we produced some EBVs. There's the bull that I just used before. He was minus 1.18. Just out of interest, there's a bull that's been used heavily in Australia where, remember, negative is better. So we've got a Gardner Precision bull that's been used heavily at a stud called Eiffelbray, who have been feed intake testing. Then we've got some others. I don't know if people know these bulls very much, but I think Scotch Cap's been fairly heavily used. Bull in the middle and his father around the middle of the pack. And then we've got some other bulls that tend to be more positive, and then the bull that I used before. So just as an illustration, we've got some bulls now that we're getting a bit of a feeling for what we might be going to see in the future. And also we've got for some whole Herefords, obviously their EBVs are a lot less spread because there's a lot less data, but we've got a Koora bull, which is a Hereford stud in Australia, that are quite negative. Some other bulls in a mixture of poles and horns, right through to another bull here in an Australian stud that's quite positive, that's also testing feed intake. So now, how is the industry going to measure the trait? Well, one of the things that was first done was that they developed a standards manual. So if breeders were going to try and measure this trait, it was very important that there was something to go by, that they knew exactly what they had to do in the test, what the protocols were, because we needed this data to be suitable for a genetic evaluation. And so it was very important that we had clear defining of management groups and that the trait that we measured across the different farms was the same trait. We also started, there's a bit of an initiative for some on-farm testing with a service called Meals on Wheels, where transportable feed efficiency units can be shifted from farm to farm and people can test their bulls and then it goes on to the next property or the next farm. There is also central testing stations that are now setting up with the ability to provide commercial services for people to test their bulls. There is also some initiatives by a couple of the breed associations to set up progeny test herds where they're testing elite sires in their breeds and they will test feed intake on those young bulls, the progeny of those young bulls. And the other important thing was that if we collected this data, it was important we had a mechanism then to get it into a genetic evaluation. So a database has been set up in the breed plan system that is able to take that data. So people that are testing, then there's a system by which that data can be submitted and it goes onto the database that then matches up with their pedigrees and performances that's in there for the other traits. This is the on-farm testing that's available. This particular breeder here, an Angus breeder, has bought his own unit here, one of these Rudway feeders, and he has purchased that and is testing his own bulls. Now, I said our numbers weren't great. Our projected numbers for the next 12 months is only a modest another 1,600 records. We're probably going to get another 1,000 from some research projects that we're doing at the Tulimba feedlot. We're probably going to get another 100 bulls from on-farm testing, probably another 400-odd, 500-odd from the central test station. So the big problem still, for people down the back, the biggest problem is cost. The cost of measuring this trait is prohibitive to a lot of breeders to do it at the moment. So I want to finish up by saying, what is the future? And obviously we need to do some new science, we need some more knowledge, and we need industry adoption. If we're going to change this trait, we need to get more measurements. So in terms of the new science or the knowledge that we need, one of the key things we're looking at is, how do we go about reducing the cost? And one of the things we're looking at is, can we use shorter testings? Shorter tests, obviously we can get more cattle tested. And one of the things we're looking at is continual weighing, the problem of average daily gain. Those feeding units, we're mounting them with weigh scales, so the animal weighs itself every time it comes in to eat. Every day we might get half a dozen weights on an animal over a 70-day test. We will be very accurate in estimating the gain of that animal. In that way, we're able to shorten the length of the test. So we're looking at several things there. In terms of the genetics, we need more variances and covariance estimates. Obviously, the feed intake and the net feed intake of the cows, we need to understand what's going on there. We need to estimate the genetic correlation between the seed stock test and the feedlot test. So we need what is the genetic relationship between feed intake tested in that Trangy post-weaning test in seed stock type animals and feed intake tested in a feedlot environment in finishing steers. We will be able to get that correlation with some linkage research that we've just set up. We're also looking very heavily at indirect measures. Obviously, this is costly. Now that we have the phenotypes, we can also look at, is there other traits that genetically predict this? Obviously, we heard this morning about mature cow weight and milk. There are some indirect measures that we're able to use, and there's some other measures of growth at different times that we suspect are quite reasonably correlated. Also, measures of fatness now become a predictor. I'll be presenting some work at the World Congress in France at the end of next month, where we've measured a trait called insulin-like growth factor 1. At this stage, we have some preliminary results that shows that it is genetically correlated with feed intake. And this is exciting work because all we need to do is take a blood sample of those young animals in every herd at weaning, and we'll be able to determine a correlated effect on feed intake or net feed intake. So we're following up that research at the moment. And also there's work going on, and I think one of the colleagues from South Australia will also be presenting work at the World Congress on a genetic marker that he has found for feed intake. And also as part of the CRC, the Cooperative Research Centre, there's quite a bit of work also going on looking for markers, because we're going to need easier measures. Although we will have to measure the trait, we're going to need correlated measures as well to help increase the accuracy on those animals that don't have a feed intake record. We're also developing those industry recording strategies, doing more work on just what might be possible, and also we're incorporating this information into our selection index. I don't know if people saw those people who didn't see my talk yesterday, but we're looking also to build that into the breed object system, where we cost feed differently now with the knowledge of residual feed intake differences. So how are we going to do that? How might we use net feed intake in a selection? Obviously, we've got our performance measures, our current set of EBVs, or in your sense, the EPDs you get from National Cattle Evaluation. We have our profit traits as they currently stand. So we've got the traits in our objective. This is what you guys over here call ERTs. We know the genetic relationships here. Sometimes they're the same traits, sometimes they're just correlated traits that we're able to measure. What we suspect we will do is actually use net feed intake from a post-weaning test in young bulls and produce the EBVs. But what we will do is put steer intake and cow feed intake as two additional traits in the breeding objective. Both of these have a cost associated with them, and we will look to build those in as traits, and we will correlate from this test. So we need to know these genetic correlations between these different measures. Then we will derive economic values for different production market objectives. The economic value of feed will change depending on what market you're targeting, where you are in Australia. Some people have very costly feed, some people have very cheap feed. That will be taken account of in the economic values that will then be used to compute index weights, which will then derive a dollar index for selecting on for profit, in which feed intake will now be costed and used incorporating that feed intake data, that net feed intake EBV. We may also have more indicator EBVs like the IGF-1 and maybe a net feed intake on cows, and we'd love to have one at pasture, but I suspect we will not get that sort of data unless we come up with some new technologies of being able to measure feed intake of cows at pasture. So in terms of industry adoption, what are we doing there? Well, obviously the new EBV that we've just produced, and these EBVs are available on the web if people want to go and have a look at them, that will help increase recording. Once people have got something that they can use, we often see that is an impetus for people getting going. Obviously, we've got to try and reduce those costs. In terms of the two-stage selection, we hope to be able to use IGF-1 and a dollar index to test elite young bulls. So we use a screening, if you like, that we are only thinking about testing young bulls that already got all the things stacked in favour in terms of their weaning weight, their calving ease, all the combination of traits and IGF-1 and whatever, that we only go to test those bulls in a program that are already likely to be candidates for selection. And obviously if we started getting paid for improvement, or if our breeders started getting paid by feedlots for producing steers from bulls with high NFI, net feed intake EBVs, that would also increase industry adoption. But once again, like all our value-based trading, that's difficult to get going, but there are some feedlots that are really starting to get interested in this trade. So in conclusion, certainly feed intake is an economically important trait. We've shown, and other people have certainly shown, that genetic variation exists. The adoption, the problem is the cost. There's no doubt about that, and that's the one we're going to have to wrestle with if we want to measure feed intake. And we must consider it then in a selection framework. We must then correctly weight how much the importance of that trait is in a multi-trait selection. More research is certainly underway, trying to work out where we should go, and we don't by any means think we've got all the answers. And certainly it's been a cooperative effort involving lots of different institutions and lots of different scientists, but we've made a start. So thank you, and just it has been a team effort with a large group from New South Wales Agriculture, the Beef CRC from the AGBU where I work, and certainly lots of others. Thank you.